Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. On average, Americans will spend $1,200 a year on prescription drugs. That's according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. That's more than any other developed country in the world. Lawmakers in Florida want to make it cheaper, at least for Floridians. There's new legislation to allow for the importation of prescription drugs through Canada in hopes of making it cheaper for people. Well, the bill has faced steady opposition from groups like the Partnership for Safe Medicines. They've raised concerns about the safety and legitimacy of drugs coming from outside of the U.S. Steve Murphy is a former DEA agent that was based here in Miami, also in Colombia, and he and his partner Javier Peña were the key team that took down narcotics kingpin Pablo Escobar back in the 1980s and 90s. Now in retirement, Murphy has shifted his focus towards prescription meds from abroad. And just a note, Republican Representative Thomas Leak is the bill's sponsor. He'll be joining us on Wednesday. Right now, again, I want to bring in Mr. Steve Murphy. Mr. Murphy, thanks so much for your time.
Hi, Louis. Please call me Steve.
All right. Well, Steve, let me start with this. You, a former DEA agent, you helped bring down one of the most notorious drug lord kingpins of the 20th century. Why are you interested in this debate?
Well, you know, I've been retired now for 6 years, Louis, and I've been a police officer since I was 19 years old. I've really never done anything else. And even though we took down Pablo Escobar and the Medellin cartel, you know, we saw others step up and take his place, and it's just like a never-ending cycle. So, you know, just because we took down the Medellin cartel, we're still having drug problems here in the United States, and you see different trends coming along. And one of the current trends that's really given Javier and I a lot of concern is the idea that we can import prescription medications from Canada at a cheaper price. And before we go any further, please understand, we are absolutely in support of driving down the prices of prescription medications. It's just that trying to do it through the Canadian pharmacies and Big Pharma in Canada, we don't believe that's the right way to do it.
So tell us, what is your biggest concern about medication coming into Florida from Canada? That's what this bill is trying to do.
Right. So first of all, Canadian pharmacies have no obligation or authority to honor American prescriptions. So right there, we're asking them to violate their own laws. And there's a variety of reasons here, and I'll try to cover as many as I can. And when I get carried away, just tell me to be quiet, and I will. The original legislation called for these prescriptions to come from Canada, but that has changed now, and it's been opened up to 22 different countries. It's not just Canada. You know, so we're looking at countries like Slovenia, Estonia, the Czech Republic, Romania, Croatia, Hungary. You know, I know for a fact that here in the United States, the reason our prescriptions are so safe is because we have the Food and Drug Administration keeping a close eye on that. And I know we all blast the government all the time for things, but the FDA actually works, and that's what keeps you and I safe. You know, so it's not the idea that this is just coming from Canada. Another is that Canadians, you're talking about 37 million residents in Canada. Florida alone has 21 million. When you look at the statistics in Canada, there are already 1,700 different prescription medications that they have a shortage in. Now, how are they going to take their supply and furnish it to the people in Florida? Would I like them to do that if it's at a cost savings? Absolutely. But I think the reality is, the truth is, that's not going to happen.
Can I come back to what you were saying a second ago? Says this opens up the opportunity now for drugs to come in from a lot of other places, not just Canada. Do we have a screening process, though? I mean, you talk about the FDA protecting us here, but is there not a screening process for drugs, prescription drugs that come into the U.S.?
There is not. I mean, well, if it comes in under FDA authorization, there is. But coming through Canada, basically, here's what happens. The prescription medications are not going to come from Canada. Canada is just used as a transshipment point. So you're going to, what we've seen in the past, there's been seven states that have already tried this. It hasn't worked in any state yet. Although, you know, let's don't stop trying. Let's find a way that works, but a way that keeps our citizens safe. So what happens is, let's say the drugs come from India, Pakistan, China, Mexico. I mean, you just pick the country. When they come into Canada, Canada has no responsibilities whatsoever to test these drugs to see if they're legitimately what they say they are. They're simply a transshipment point, meaning that it just comes into Canada and then ships straight into the United States. Now, we have a friend in Canada, Don Bell, who's the retired superintendent for the Ontario Provincial Police, 32 years experience, ran the intel unit for their Border Patrol section as well. He has personally told us Canadians have no laws that require them to do that. They have no moral obligation, nor do they have the resources and manpower to check those medications or to check that where they're coming from are legitimate pharmaceutical companies. So basically, we're on our own when we accept these, supposed medications coming in from whatever country they happen to come from.
And you're concerned that because there isn't going to be any oversight, that anything could be coming across the border, it could be dangerous, or it could be worthless. It could just be placebos.
Exactly. And we have documented cases where this has happened. In the six states that, or the seven states that have tried this program before, what we've seen is within a very short amount of time, when the medications were tested here in the United States, we found out that, one, they contain no active ingredient for whatever the medical issue is that you're trying to treat, or it has a reduced active ingredient, which makes it worthless, or, heaven forbid, we found adulterants within those medications. Did you know right now there are 46 states in the United States that we found counterfeit prescriptions coming into those states, and 29 of those states have had deaths because of fentanyl being the ingredient that was added to it. This just scares me to death. This epidemic is just going crazy, and this is just opening the door to more abuse and more safety issues for Americans.
And I want to clarify to you. You said adulterants?
Yes.
Okay. No. And could you clarify, please, what that is?
Oh, I'm sorry. An adulterant could be anything other than what's supposed to be in there.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
So typically what we're seeing is fentanyl, because it takes such a very small amount of fentanyl to cause a reaction. And we're not talking about grams. We're talking about grains. Grains. Think of a grain of salt. It's been proven that 3 to 4 grains of fentanyl can cause an overdose death.
So, we come back to something you said a little while ago, which is, of course, you want cheaper medication for Americans. And this is a big debate politically, is how can we reduce the cost for patients? So you have your issues with this bill, but what do you say to Floridians about, well, yes, but how do we reduce the cost? Because that's such it's really big for so many people.
And that's the $64 question. And you know what, Lewis? I don't purport to be an expert in this. I am an expert in criminal organizations, and that's what I see the potential is here. We should never, and God bless our Americans that are having financial issues. I'm not going against you. I want to be for you. But we should never risk the safety of our citizens to save a few bucks.
All right. Are you in any way worried about criminal organizations trying to sell drugs, pushing it through Canada?
Oh, absolutely. It's been proven that it's been done. There's at least 4 pharmaceutical organizations that were purportedly Canadian pharmaceutical companies that had legal issues here in the United States. And then that brings up a whole other issue. What happens when the state of Florida or any state that's trying to do the right thing here, and I believe that the governor and the legislature in Florida have the right intentions. I truly do. I just don't agree with the way it's going about. Well, I think there needs to be a lot more research done on this.
And the governor's a big proponent of this. Have you spoken with any lawmakers, the governor, with Representative Thomas Leek, just to get their take on this and give your perspective?
I have not. And it was that's a little bit of our fault, because we came into the game a little late, with the Florida legislative session ending last Friday. So we didn't get involved in this quick enough to do that. I would love to hear what they say. And believe me, I'll do everything I can to support thee. And I know Javier will as well. But the point I was going to make a while ago is when we find out that they start importing these medications and there's a problem, let's say that they're either laced with fentanyl or any other adulterant, or the medication doesn't meet the minimum requirements of the FDA here in the United States, what recourse does Florida have to go after these foreign players? The jurisdiction of the laws of the state of Florida end at the borders at the state of Florida. They don't have national jurisdiction. They don't have international jurisdiction. Now, some proponents say, well, the federal government will step in. Since 2003, no leader of the FDA or HHS has been in support of these programs. So to say that the feds are going to step in and do something about that, that's not a proven fact, not as of yet.
And just to note that our session is about to end. It ends this week. And if they pass this bill, there still has to be federal permission to do it. They still have to go to the federal government, and the federal government has to decide whether or not Florida can do this. So there's still a lot of hurdles to cross. Again, we're going to be speaking with Republican Representative Thomas Leak, who's the sponsor of the bill. We're going to talk to him on Wednesday. And right now, what we're talking about is this bill, again, in Florida, to try to find a way to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. And a big part of it was to see if we can get a lot of that medication through Canada. But as pointed out, it can now be coming through a lot of other places. We're talking with Steve Murphy, a former DEA agent now in retirement. He's advocating with the group Partnership for Safe Medicines. That's a nonprofit organization that opposes proposals to import pharmaceutical drugs from Canada. I wanted to move over to some of your past, because this is also kind of an interesting story here in Miami. I mean, you came down to Miami, the DEA office in the early 80s. And of course, that's, you know, the infamous time of the cocaine cowboys. But paint that picture for us of the scope of the cocaine trade in the United States at the time, but especially what was happening in Miami. Was it anything like what we saw in TV and movies?
Oh, you know, unfortunately, Lewis, it was. I didn't get to Miami until 1987, but I'd been in law enforcement since 1975. And I'll be honest with you, I was shocked when I got to South Florida. I mean, you know, we all saw on the news what was going on. You know, we read about the Miami River cops. We saw about there were so many cadavers in Miami that the morgue couldn't hold it, and they were having to rent refrigerator trucks to hold the body so they wouldn't begin the decomposition process. That was all true. Now, when I got to Miami, I'd been a police officer for almost 12 years, and this was in southern West Virginia and eastern Virginia. So the most powder cocaine I had never seen at one time was 2 ounces at that time, and I know that's a very, very small amount. The first case I worked on in Miami, Florida, we went undercover to the Turks and Caicos Islands to, the distribution group was there in South Florida, but we picked up the cocaine from them that they delivered to us. It was 400 kilos. So I went from 2 ounces to 880 pounds of cocaine. Truly, truly an eye-opener. I was somewhat naive, but, I was out flying patrol one time out of Florida over in the Bahamas. We saw a bell that had washed up on the beach. This was in a U.S. Coast Guard helicopter. They lowered me down in the basket out of one of those old Sikorsky helicopters. That bell contained 72 kilograms of cocaine that had just washed up on the beach. You know,
wow.
I mean, you can go back and look at the news articles and see about the marijuana that people found floating in the ocean off the coast of Fort Lauderdale and West Palm, all those areas down there. It was just crazy.
You know, following Escobar's death in the early 90s, I mean, you came back to the U.S., you continued the work with the DEA just until not that long ago. How much has Miami remained a significant player in the drug trade since Escobar?
You know, the Colombians developed different partners. So they're always looking for new ways to import drugs into the United States. And that Caribbean corridor was, you know, that was the main corridor for cocaine coming to the United States back in the 80s. But eventually the Colombians established working relationships with the Mexicans. And so they began transporting their cocaine primarily up through Central America into Mexico. And what they did is they negotiated a deal with the Mexican traffickers. So now the Mexican traffickers are responsible for getting the cocaine into the United States. Now, this is not to say that the Caribbean corridor is not used. You know, we know the Colombians have used the semi-submersible and fully submersible self-propelled submarines to import cocaine and other drugs into the United States. So there are other routes. But think about that agreement with the Mexicans. That reduced the risk to the Colombians by significant amounts, because that was the biggest challenge, was getting the cocaine across the border into the United States. So, you know, I really hesitate to give drug traffickers credit for being ingenious, but that was a pretty good business move on that part, because they reduced their risk, and we know they're still making tons and tons of cash.
Yeah, and you know, turning this into, I want to ask about the war on drugs, America's famous war on drugs, which goes back to the 80s. NPR's Marketplace recently teamed up with the Reveal team for a special program about the war on drugs. And reporter Chrissy Clark was behind the project called The Uncertain Hour. Let's take a quick listen on this.
By September 1989, it had been almost two decades since Richard Nixon first declared a, quote, war on drugs.
Public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse.
And yet, despite Nixon's hawkish rhetoric, the 70s were overall actually a pretty dovish time for federal drug policy. In fact, Nixon put more money into drug treatment than arresting drug dealers. At the same time, Congress lowered federal penalties for drug trafficking, and Jimmy Carter talked about decriminalizing marijuana. By the early 1980s, though, the pendulum was swinging the other way.
The mood toward drugs is changing in this country, and the momentum is with us.
President Reagan relaunched the war on drugs while he was in office.
We've taken down the surrender flag and run up the battle flag, and we're going to win the war on drugs.
So, Steve, one of the criticisms that they found in the reporting was reducing the supply of cocaine in the market didn't have a marked effect on drug abuse and usage. Do you think targeting the suppliers instead of the users was the best way to go? What's your take on that?
There is, I think sometimes when we get into these discussions, we're looking for a single answer to solve the problem. And there is no single answer. That's, you know, unfortunately, the United States is the leading consumer nation in the world when it comes to recreational drugs, illegal narcotics. Not a reputation that we're proud of, but it's the truth. So we're talking about the Drug Enforcement Administration as well as other agencies that have drug enforcement policies and responsibilities. We try to attack it from every angle, not just the street level, not just the user, not just the street level, not the mid-level, not the importers, the gatekeepers, the transporters, the people that are the money launderers, the people that grow the coca leaves. We try to attack it from every single angle to get the biggest bang for our buck. Now, you know, we can say, well, we took out the Medellin cartel, we took out the Cali cartel, we took out the North Valley cartel, we took down the Don Byrne organization. My question is, can you still go out on the street corner of any place in the United States and buy cocaine? You and I both know the answer to that. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
And if you look at this from a business perspective, where you're looking at the basic element of business, supply versus demand, we need to really address the demand issue here in the United States more heavily than we're doing now. I am certainly not taking anything away from the enforcement element. God bless the men and women who are willing to put on uniforms to go out there to protect you and me. I'm a retiree. I'm a has-been. I don't carry a weapon anymore. I'm not enforcing any laws here. So God bless them for what they do. We need them. We need that enforcement element. But maybe we need to do a better job here in the United States of educating at the earliest possible age. You know, DEA has implemented a program called the 360 Strategy, in which they go into high-risk communities, and they don't go in and just talk to law enforcement. And think about this. It's not fair to say go to the cops and say, look, fix this problem, or to go to our legislatures and say, fix this problem, or our doctors or our pharmacies or whatever group. So this 360 strategy that DEA has, they're going in and they're bringing the entire communities together. And that's by that I mean the legislatures, the policymakers, the enforcers, the faith-based community, the doctors, the pharmacies, the hospitals, moms and dads, the school systems, they're bringing everybody together to work towards a common goal, and that's to reduce drugs in our communities. And, you know, I'm not an expert on that. I've been retired from DEA for a while, but God bless DEA for coming up with this strategy, because I think we're seeing some positive results come out of this.
Let me finish with this real briefly. You said something at the beginning about changing trends, and I'm wondering, yes, you're right, we could still get illicit drugs, you know, at any time. But is the focus now more on opioids, pharmaceutical drugs, you know, not the illegal stuff, but sometimes the legal stuff? Is that more of the problem today?
I think so. You know, I was talking to a friend down in Arizona recently, and I just lost a stat here. In just the year 2018, just in the state of Arizona, there was enough fentanyl seized to kill between 75 and 80 million people in one single border state. So we look at, you know, and you can get into these arguments about big pharma introducing opioids and the negative effects we've had from that. We've seen major fines, financial fines against some of these big pharmaceutical companies, but it doesn't seem to have slowed them down. The truth is, we have an opioid, heroin, and fentanyl epidemic in the United States right now. When heroin has become so cheap on the street that it's cheaper to use heroin at a higher percentage rate. You know, the quality of it is higher so that you don't need to use a needle to inject it now. You can smoke it. You can snort it. When that is cheaper than going out and buying an opioid or a painkiller pill on the street, oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, have we lost focus here? It just, you know, my personal opinion is I just believe our community, our society has become so permissive that we just allow people to do anything they want to do, and that includes killing themselves.
This is a conversation we can just continue for a while. I've been talking with Steve Murphy, former DEA agent. He's an advocate with the group, the Partnership for Safe Medicines. That's a nonprofit organization that opposes proposals to import pharmaceutical drugs from Canada, from outside of the United States. Again, because of many of the risks involved. And we're going to be talking with the lawmaker later this week. He is Republican Representative Thomas Leek, who is the bill sponsor that, again, wants to bring in cheaper prescription drugs into Florida. Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Lewis, thank you for the opportunity to come on your show. I appreciate it.
And by the way, if you're interested in hearing the full special from the podcast Uncertain Hour about the war on drugs on Marketplace from PRI, it's on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, some Palm Beach County residents will have their power lines buried underground. We'll look into that and public transit issues up there in Palm Beach County, all coming up next on Sundial.